a kettle of water on the stove, the water boils. It's natural. It is a happening. When the wind blows, the tree swings. It's a happening. These are mere happenings. This is a happening. So long as we are able, so long as we are able to see, to become aware of the happening as happening, so long there is no problem at all. But it is only when the notion of I am seeing him arises in the mind, then the mind links it with past memory. Oh, I saw him somewhere else. Or I saw the like of him somewhere else. You know, I went to America last time. Oh, they tore me to pieces. Or they adored me. They worshipped me. Or they trampled upon me. All these memories crowd round this one notion. If this notion didn't arise, memory or no memory, they would have nothing to crowd round, nothing to stick on to. It is wrong, therefore, to say that we are full of prejudice. From time immemorial, we have been conditioned from millions of years. And there is the race consciousness, group consciousness, some unconsciousness, all sorts of consciousness. And therefore, I cannot get rid of it. It's absurd. The moment this notion drops, everything drops. The moment that notion drops, that I see you drops, everything has dropped. Memory, karma, what have you? The understanding of this is yoga. Tada drashtuhu swarupe avasthanam. Then the seer remains as the act of seeing. The seer suddenly realizes that there is no seer. The observer realizes that there is no observer. That what he regarded as an observer, what was regarded as a seer, was himself the seen, was himself an image. When you nod your head, you are creating another lovely image of, that is it. That is not. It's easy for anyone sitting here to say, oh no, that's not. Because the thing that tries to understand this is the intellect, which is nothing but a tool of this notion, of I, what you call the ego. Therefore, without congratulating ourselves prematurely that I have entered into samadhi, satori, you know, I can see the light. This light is not a thing that is to be seen. This light is something which illumines. Illumines the very thought with which you think this. Vijñātāramare kena vijāniyāt. He is the knower. He is a silly word. Never mind. You have to use some word. Since all words are stupid, why not use this word? Everything is silly, why not this? Vijñātāram are kena vijāniyat. In Sanskrit, the word he is not there. Vijñātāram, the knower. By what can you know the knower? That's the literal meaning. By what light can this inner light be illumined? Nothing. We have no help here at all, except to be constantly and vigilantly watchful for the arising of this wave, the sudden arising of the wave. I see him. Do I see him? No. Seeing happens. It's not even any expression you use here will be inadequate. It is wrong to say, my eyes see you. My eyes have no power to see you. Pull them out and put them there in that ashtray. They can see nothing. My brain sees you, stupid. Take that brain out and put it there. It sees nothing. My mind sees you is an absurd expression because you don't know what your mind is. No mind. Seeing takes place. And that's all that can be said. And as seeing takes place, a silly notion, I, jumps up from inside. Inside or outside, I don't know where. That's for you to see. One who is vigilantly watchful of this intruder is a yogi. Whatever be the practice that enables one to arrive at this is yoga. This ever watchfulness, unblinking vigilance is enlightenment. That is yoga. He who practices this is the yogi. Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om. 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 श्री राम जय जय राम ओम। ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षियमांसात्। ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षियमांसात्। ॐ त्र्यम्बकं यजामहे सुगन्धिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव वन्दनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षियमांसात्। सर्वेषां स्वस्ति भवतु, सर्वेषां पूर्णं भवतु, सर्वेषां मङ्गलं भवतु। सर्वे भवन्तु सुखिनः, सर्वे सन्तु निरामया, सर्वे भद्राणि पश्यन्तु, मा कश्चित् दुःखभाग् भवेत्। हसतो मा सद्गमय, तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय, मृत्योर्मा अमृतं गमय। ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Thank you. Over to you for any questions. Translations are defective. No. There are certain extremely difficult expressions. Certain expressions can just not be put into words. I'm not saying that even the sutras are ill-translated. Oh no. Each one looks at it from a certain point of view. Even so, the Upanishads, some portions are so... You know what the word Upanishad originally seems to have meant? Sitting near. The master and the disciple sitting near each other, probably looking deep into each other's eyes and communicating the truth. The truth thus communicated has quite a completely different effect from what is read and what is heard. Again, I may not mention names. I read quite a number of books of a very great master. Must say, I wasn't terribly taken in. Then once or twice I went to hear him, that seemed to be, there's certain, you know, the inflections in the voice and the tone, and something is there. It seemed to be slightly better. Then a couple of times I went to see him, the effect was revolutionary. Books can and do help us tremendously. My guru, Swami Shivananda, used to say, if you cannot have the direct satsanga or company of a holy man, the books are the next best thing. But while reading all this, whether the Yoga Sutras or the Upanishads or Gita and other texts, it's always good to remember that something beyond those words. The meaning is just beyond those words. The meaning is just beyond those words. And that will prevent us from nodding our head, this is the thing that he's talking about. It's not the thing that he's talking about. We are in yoga, in mysticism, in spiritual life, we are entering into a realm for which no words have been coined. I'm not saying that the translations are the translators are inadequate. Translation itself is inadequate. Words themselves are inadequate. Oh, they're lovely translations, beautiful translations.
Second part of that then would be, do you think that the rishis, the right wise men of the past, in their attempts to write this down, as difficult as it is, do you think that the modern wise men or saints or sages, rishis, have equal or comparable knowledge or consciousness about life?
I'm quite sure, sir. I'm quite sure of that. The ancient rishis, there is just one little distinction, if one may make such distinctions, is that the ancient rishis do not seem to have been so much driven to commit their teaching to writing. Even the texts that have come down to us are said to be, I'm not an authority on this, are said to be notes kept by the disciples. The master himself hardly ever wrote. Notes kept by the disciples. And they have been circulated. I'm quite definite on this, that as regards enlightenment, there is no ancient, there is no modern. No. Modern saints and sages do commit things to writing. Many of them. I believe among the modern saints or sages, I believe only Ramana Maharshi didn't write very much. Even the 40 verses that are attributed to him, they, I believe, were sort of scribbled and later on put together. He was the only one that didn't write very much. The others are prolific in their production. No, it's. I didn't say it's difficult, sir. In the hope, in the very fervent and well-meant, well-intentioned hope that this is better than nothing, number one. And I mean, if these books didn't exist at all, we wouldn't even be sitting here together, yes? So, the the container of the knowledge, which is the word, is communicated in the fervent hope that someone might pierce the veil of the word, pierce the veil of the word and see through it. Therefore, even a second-rate, third-rate, third-rate text on yoga is equally good. As a step, that's a step. You read, incidentally, when it comes to these great commentaries on these great texts like the Yoga Sutras or the Upanishads or the Gita, my own, I would recommend this. Get as many translations and commentaries as possible. You know what somebody says immediately? Oh, I'd be confused. The more thoroughly confused you are, the better. Because then you would wonder, ooh, he says this, he says that, the other man says something completely contradictory. I found it now. That is it. That's what is necessary. Otherwise, you get hooked on to some ideology, some thought, and you build an image with that thought, with that ideology, with that person's thinking, and that's the end of it. It's better to read as many commentaries as possible.
So would you say as long as you can verbalize it, as long as you can conceptualize it, that's not it?
That's exactly, sir. As long as you can conceptualize it, it is not it. So I keep going, right? That's what you say. I keep going.
You say that this is the same with the guru-shishya relationship, or did you say that the shishya should answer the guru?
That's a bigger thing. You are using the word guru, I guess, in its connotation as a teacher. One can have as many teachers as one likes. A teacher for geography, a teacher for chemistry, and another for physics. And your geography teacher might become your tennis pupil. You know, that sort of thing is possible.
I'm talking as a spiritual.
Yeah, that's what I say. So, in this sort of, as a teacher, you can have any as many teachers as you like. But guru is a different thing altogether. Guru is light. One who enlightens you. One who enables you to attain enlightenment. One who points the way to enlightenment. One who awakes you spiritually. That person can only be one, I think. I don't know.
Jiva Bandha for a while, and I think...
What Bandha, sir?
Jiva Bandha.
Jiva Bandha.
And I think I'm almost ready, with the help of Ben Spoon, to attempt Kachari Mudra. Is there any danger? If I can get it in, can I get it out by myself? Or if there's something...
I hope you can get out. But please, so long as there is fear, don't do it. So long as there is fear... Pardon? It doesn't block breath completely, but so long as there is fear, don't do it. Incidentally, I'm not discouraging you. I'm saying something, again, as usual, something comical. I've seen two or three people who have done this. It's a beautiful thing. You know, the cutting the frenum, lengthening the tongue, so that it can be turned back and pushed into the nasal apertures. Most of us don't go to that extent. And even when we want to practice some kind of Kechari Mudra, we merely roll the tongue back and stick it as far back as possible. That is considered a practice which helps meditation. I was explaining this to a group of yoga students in Madagascar about 6-7 years ago. I said it's extremely difficult unless you sort of cut the thing and so on. And so, well, you don't have to go to the extreme limit, but try to push the tongue backward, roll the tongue backward. One French woman there, she looked at me as though I was some crazy creature. And immediately after the class, she came to me and said, "You said it is difficult. It is not difficult at all." I said, "What do you mean?" She just opened her mouth, pushed the tongue back, it disappeared. I was flabbergasted. And looked again, sure enough, she is born without the freedom. She had been born without this, you know, the freedom is the membrane that connects the base root of the tongue with the lower, the floor of the mouth. She's just born without it. So that by birth she is practicing Khechari. As a matter of fact, that is what spoiled my faith in Khechari Mudra. And then I looked at her little daughter, little one, 6 years, open your mouth, she was also, probably it runs in the family. She also had no freedom, so that she could also push the tongue back. It's quite normal, except that speech is a bit heavy, slightly heavy, otherwise it's quite normal. But then I looked at them, can you fly in the air? Can you enter into samadhi? Nothing at all, it's just ordinary human beings. So there is something more to it. You must look for a teacher who practices this and then learn something more from you. Are there different religious paths, sir? I may not believe that. I may not believe those classifications. Yes, sir. I understand your question. I think it's very good for each one of us to be acquainted with all these and maybe one day it will click. You would either have made your choice or you would have perhaps got a sort of fruit salad made of all these, a bit of here, a bit of that, and a bit of that, and a bit of that, and a bit of this. And it may be a more balanced meal for you. Krishna is very specific in that respect. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, the mind must be baffled. The more sure we are, this is the truth, the farther we are from the truth. The mind must be baffled. And then it comes to an end. It comes to the logical conclusion. You know what logical conclusion means? Conclusion of logic. Thank you.